Welcome back, everyone, to Late Night Baseball after a week hiatus. Parker.
We had content come out, though.
We did. We did have content. Parker, you busted your butt putting out our kind of behind the scenes in Glendale and turned out pretty nice. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah, if you haven't, I appreciate it. First of all, thank you. I appreciate everybody who has already watched. Leave a like, subscribe on it. It's pretty cool. It took me, I don't edit well in multiple sessions. Like I kind of have a vision and have to make it. So it was like literally like a 7 hour, like stare at my computer screen and to finish it. So it would be nice if everybody went on there and made it the most popular baseball video of the year.
All right. So everyone, Parker worked really hard. Okay. Give him a gold star. Like, please like. Good job, buddy. You did good.
Parker, oh, man.
Obviously, I was gone last week, went down to Florida with the kids. We did Disney for a couple days. That was really cool. And not going to lie, I actually was unplugged from baseball.
I was going to ask, how much baseball did you because I was like, I didn't text you every time I thought about baseball because I knew you're on vacation. But there were some times where I had to be like, dude, we got to talk about this type of stuff. So
yeah, 100%. So I paid attention, obviously, to your text. But I also, the only baseball I consumed while I was down there is my grandfather down there is a Cubs fan. So we did watch a couple of Cubs games while we were down there. So I obviously am never going to fully escape baseball. But
right.
But outside of that, the last week, as we are 10 to 12 games, depending on the team, into this season, it's been wild. And I want to start today by just like addressing the Blue Jay elephant in the room with Vlad Guerrero getting the cash money. I mean, he finally was extended by the Blue Jays and he got the bank.
Yeah, not just got paid, but like the weirdest contract I have ever freaking seen. Like, this is Shohei Ohtani levels of weird, because none of it's deferred. It's a 14-year, $500 million deal, for those of you who weren't aware. But he got like $350 million of it as a signing bonus. So, like, that's going to, from what I know, compared to a lot of people out there, I know very little about how the whole pay structure works in its entirety. And I know that some of that money is going to play into each year of the deal. Kind of like Shohei's contract does not actually come out to be $70 million of not cap hit, but of luxury tax hit every year. I want to know how much luxury tax money that is for this season and then moving forward.
So I can actually tell you, because one of the things that with his deal, it actually doesn't take into effect until next year. So his cap hit his cap hit technically, or illustrious, actually, I keep saying, I've been listening to a lot of football lately too. Cap hit is not the right thing to say, but his luxury tax is his count towards the luxury tax, I'm trying to say, is 35 million and some change. So it's still high
per year.
So yeah, and so for those of you who are football fans like Parker and I, you know, when you're giving signing bonuses in football free agency, it helps navigate the cap space. So the signing bonus for football doesn't count towards a player's cap space or their hit on the cap. That is not how it works in baseball. They gave this guy cash money, in football to a certain extent. It depends on how you structure those contracts. But
yeah,
in baseball, that's really not how it works. In fact, signing bonuses of this size or even close to this size aren't really a thing.
No, not even close. This is the biggest one I've ever seen in baseball. You know what people don't talk about enough when it comes to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is he's Canadian. Like, he was born and raised in Canada and has lived there for most of his life. You know, he spends a lot of time down in the Dominican with his family and things like that. But he was largely Canadian raised when he was a child, because his father put down roots there after being, you know, a very significant player in the Montreal Expos franchise and things like that. Like, Vladdy loves Canada and wanted to be in Canada. And, you know, people like me who went on tangents talking about how there wasn't a number that they could shoot out that would get him to sign there. Evidently, that was not true. It just came down to how are we going to structure this deal to make it worth the most for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And here's the deal. While I do think that this was a concerted effort on both the player, the team, and all agents involved part, I also have another theory as to why this deal got done when it did. And I'm curious as why you think it got done, and then I can get into mine.
Okay, interesting. So I don't know that I can tell you why I think it got done right now. I can't tell you. There was
more reported money in spring training. I think there was $650, wasn't it?
Not necessarily, because the reports in spring training had always been around the $500 million number. Roundabouts, okay. Right? Around there.
Okay.
So I don't know that I can come to the plate here and say, here's why it happened now. Here are two things, though, I will say. Is when you look at how just the mechanics of this deal and how we got here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Vlad wants to, he's Canadian, he wants to be in Canada, he loves the Blue Jays, whatever. The Blue Jays themselves, the organization, were really backed into a corner. They could not not sign him. It would have been devastating for them. So Vlad Jr. had all the leverage in this situation to get exactly what he wanted. And I think that coalesced into, here's $325 million out of the gate. I think Vlad absolutely had him against the wall in this situation, as he should have. And number two, if you're the Blue Jays and you're that ownership group and you're looking at the deals that Fernando Tatis got with the Padres, kicking yourself why you didn't do this earlier.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, not even that. I mean, we can go to the extreme and look at like the Merrill deal, the Christian Campbell deal, things like that. I don't know that you're ever going to get Vladimir for that money, but he is only 26 years old. Like, we look at the money that Garrett Crochet just got. Like, it's because he's hitting free agency young. Mm-hmm. Vlad is 26 years, 24 days old. This is his age 26 season, and he just got signed for 14 years. So he will be 40 when it ends. Like,
that's crazy.
And I truly feel, you know what this deal feels like to me? It feels a lot like a Pujols with 4 years on the front of it.
I hate that, though. Like, I'm sorry. I understand the argument of, hey, all these deals, you just kind of got to take the good with the bad, or the bad with the good, and just soak up the last 3 or 4 years of the deal and suck it up. I'm sorry. That's bad business. I don't want to pay Vlad. Vlad, I'm telling you right now, is going to be a worse situation than Pujols. He's going to be the last 5 or 6 years of this deal, I think we're going to have a problem with him. And you're going to pay him $35 million?
It's going to be Frank Thomas all over again.
Yeah. I think it's going to be worse than those two situations. Honestly, it's going to be worse than Frank. It's going to be worse than Albert. I just don't have faith in him like I had those two other guys. And those two other guys still had those down seasons.
To Vlad's credit, and look, I mean, I'm directly comparing these deals, Pujols and Vladimir now. Pujols posted prior to that deal. And then it all went downhill very quickly. You start stacking up an injury that makes you compensate and incur another one and things like that. Like, we could very, very easily watch this guy go from a healthy guy who plays every single day to an injury liability. Now he's only 26. And give him 5 years and his body may start catching up with him. But then the thing is, with most of these mega deals, when they're, 8, 9, 10 years long, you pay for those first great 5 years. And then for 3 to 5 more years, they're kind of a payroll liability. And then you get the money off the books and maybe some sort of salary dump trade or things like that. You can't salary dump a decade. Like, you can't. If he turns 32 and you have 6 years left of this deal at $35 million a pop, and he hasn't hit above 250 in two seasons and hasn't played more than 80 games, like, We're looking at one of the biggest whale contracts in baseball, and looking at the biggest whale contract in baseball history if it turns into that. Now, I do want to talk about why this deal got done right now at this moment.
Yeah.
It is my belief that if there wasn't a massive looming lockout where the number one issue is a salary cap, whether that looks like it's going to get done or not, I have almost no doubt. I have zero doubt that these contracts will be honored post whatever happens to the salary structure in Major League Baseball. And most likely will be accounted for in whatever math they use to determine salary later on. Like, I have very little doubt that they are going to find a way to effectively grandfather these massive salaries into a capped system or a semi-capped system. So I think that both parties are like, if we can keep Vladdy here and he wants $500 million to do it, this is probably the best time for both parties to get it done. Cause it's like when Mookie signed when COVID kicked off, it's like, okay, I was going to hit free agency. The players union wants me to hit free agency. I'm sure the players union wanted Vladdy to hit free agency.
Oh yeah.
But what are you going to do? Like, you can't, like, you have to look out for yourself and your family moving forward. And I don't blame Vladdy, and I don't blame the Blue Jays. I think this is just the situation that we're in as a sport.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'll even add to that another reason why the lockout kind of motivates, I think, the Blue Jays, or excuse me, Vlad, to get this done is, remember, folks, if there's a lockout and games aren't played, players don't get paid. Okay.
Yep.
So if I'm Vlad, I'll take $325
million. Absolutely. Vlad doesn't give a shit if baseball's played for the next 10 years.
100%. And he knows that, worst case scenario, first off, if this happened, we would all just cry and just throw fits. But if for some reason 2026 season does not happen, you're covered, and then some, by a lot. You're getting your money.
Right. And not for nothing. Like, I do think there will be baseball played in 2026, but it is like, there are the players union and the owners will always posture like they are willing to go to the ends of the earth. But at the end of the day, Major League Baseball teams are very expensive to maintain, and Major League Baseball players like making money and playing baseball. So I have a feeling we will play baseball games in 2026, but this is going to be the single most disgusting, nasty lockout I think that we've seen since they canceled the rest of the season in, what was it, 95?
94.
94, the year before I was born.
I mean, the sport just makes too much money for them to do any elongated lockout anymore. It's not the same like it was in 94.
Not to turn this into a lockout episode, you know what fucking sucks about that is that the sport's in a better place than it's ever been. The sport's making more money, has more viewers. Yeah. The whole TV rights thing, look, this whole ESPN, I've been doing a lot of research about this whole ESPN fiasco and how they canceled the last 3 years of their deal, and we're waiting until the rest, like Fox and TBS and all these different places. Basically, what Manfred seems like he's doing is waiting until every major television deal that he has under his belt expires, and then would be in a good position to set up a very robust in-house, or at least in-house contracted, streaming solution to encompass almost all of Major League Baseball, which is all anybody's wanted for so long.
Sign me up for that. I will pay dumb money for that. Dumb money.
The Red Sox just lost in 11 innings to drop their third straight game to the Toronto Blue Jays.
That is rough.
Yeah.
That's rough. We're going to circle back
Tanner,
to that.
Tanner Houck went six and two thirds innings with one earned run and going to get a no decision. Sorry, go ahead.
Damn. Okay, so I want to, going back to Vlad for a second, because I have a question I want to pose. So, Vlad, hold on, let me make sure I get it right. So if you had a choice between signing Vlad right now and having him on your team for the $500 million over 14 years, or you had the option of doing Juan Soto for 15 years at $765, who are you going with?
That's harder than it.
Than you thought it would be, right?
I think I have to say Soto. I think I have to say Juan Soto. Because I think
But you hesitated.
Absolutely. Neither of them I think is going to I don't think anybody's going to look kindly on either of these deals, if you ask me.
No way.
There are very few of these mega deals that have truly, truly, like, worked out. I would say Bryce Harper is a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Fernando Tatis, the deal of the century. Oh, my God. If you signed him to that deal right now, they'd be like, you left half of your money on the table.
The Harper one? Yeah. Yeah.
Harper, Tatis. Like, Tatis's deal looks pretty amazing. But again, that was like a super early in the pre-free agency process. A full-blown free agency deal, I don't know that many of them have been looked at as favorable, and I think these two could theoretically go down as the worst ones, depending on how their bodies hold up. Granted, both guys have not really had injury troubles so far, so...
Sure.
I don't know. Is the six years of incredible MVP caliber competition worth the 8 years of 120 OPS plus?
No. And here's why. It goes back to the, and this, I know this is just literally a personal opinion based on nothing but the eye test. We talked about this before when we compare like the MVP status of Judge and Bobby Witt.
Yep.
Bobby Witt is a guy I will give 765 or 800 million to.
Yes.
He is a guy who is going to give me you're going to get a five-tool player for the most amount of time, and he is an actual pure athlete. I'm sorry. Juan Soto may be one of the best hitters since Ted Williams. I get that, but he's not going to play stellar defense. I don't know how his body is going to hold up. So why are you paying that for the guy? Like, I know that's what the market demands right now, but I'm sorry. Give me that for a Bobby Witt, a Jaren Duran, like someone who is an athletic specimen in every phase of the game.
So as somebody like as I'm obviously you mentioned Jaren Duran, I'm a Red Sox fan and Jaren's on the team. As somebody who's a fan of a team in that situation where it's like, okay, do we lock this guy up long term? There's no doubt in any fan's mind, I think, that they really want him around. I think they want Jaren Duran on the team long term. What scares Red Sox fans about Jaren and any player like him, so like I think a Bobby Witt kind of falls into that category of just sheer athleticism, is one knee injury and you're half your speed for the rest of your career. And when speed is such a massive part of your game, you can't sign a guy through age 36 and expect that speed to stick around. So that's why I think the Bobby Witt deal is such a good deal, because it I think he's locked up through his age 32 33 34,
yeah
32 season. He gets to go be a free agent again at 32. So I think that deal might actually be the steal of the century. But yeah, that's what concerns me. I think Jaren Duran gets like a six for like 180 kind of deal. That's what scares me about those hyper athletic guys.
No, that makes perfect sense. Absolutely. The speed's a big part of it. Definitely a multifaceted part of their game. So the this season Parker has opened up in just a strange way. Like what I like to do is, you know, every week or so I like to check in on the standings and see how things are going. And I kind of want to run through some things that really surprised me and get your thought on them. And I want to start with the National League East, where the Braves have just absolutely not look like the Braves. What the hell is going on?
No, the Braves, as we stand here right now, I'm actually on Baseball Reference, so I don't know if this is updated since, I don't know if they played yet today or finished yet today. Baseball Reference has them at 2-8, 5.5 games behind the Mets. The Mets are also on fire, but we can get to that later. But the Braves have just played horribly. And it is not really in part due to the pitching. It's all the fact that they cannot hit the baseball. Their offense is completely silent. And this is a team that, even without Ronald Acuña Jr., is largely the same team that won a World Series in 2021 on the back of an absolutely explosive offense. In fact, in some ways, they're better than that 21. A lot of those players or pieces in that team are better than that 21 World Series team. And the fact that you can't score runs. Now, almost, I'm going to take the optimistic route on this, because if there's one thing that a guy like Rafael Devers has proven this year, if there's one thing that offense will do, is that a whole team is really not going to slump over the course of a 162 game season. I think that the Braves will definitely figure it out. Like, timing happens, and like, I don't know where they played their game. Well, I guess they played their games in sunny California, so they're not really worried about weather right now. Like, the Red Sox haven't hit the last three games, but it's also been 28, 30, and 40 degrees in Fenway Park. So I'm kind of chalking it up to that. But no, I think that there isn't as much cause for concern for the Braves in terms of overall production as I think people would lead you to believe. Now, this division projects to be so fucking tight that dropping your first eight games could genuinely lose you the division in September.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. So unless the Braves get super hot and the pitching is actually better than we thought it was going to be, because now you need to make a comeback. Now you need to be better than you were projected to be for the rest of the season in order to make up that eight game deficit that you decided to start the season with. So now you need your pitching to be stellar and you need your offense to be insane. So
yes. Yeah. You don't want to be in a position where you have to make up ground starting in May. That's the
problem. You really need to get your shit together before the end of the month.
I mean, they're running out of time. I guess they're not running out of time. It's only a third of the way through the month. I keep forgetting.
You certainly can't. You can't win the division in April, but you can lose it. Like, that's very prevalent here. Yes,
100%. Whereas the Phillies and the Mets are doing what we thought they were going to do right there. First and second in the division, 7-3 for the Phillies, 8-4 for the Mets. I keep coming back to this with the Mets. It's the freaking pitching. Like, they can give me 8-4 now, but come see me in June and let's see where they're at with the pitching.
The Mets of this year remind me to a T of the Red Sox from last year, because the Red Sox came out of their first 10 games at 7-3. Granted, in like that 10th game or maybe the 9th, they lost Trevor Story for the season. So that has not happened to the Mets, or something to that effect hasn't happened. But what happened to the Red Sox was they were like borderline the best team in baseball leading into the All-Star break. And then the bullpen exploded and they couldn't win a game. They couldn't do anything after the sixth inning of a baseball game. They started playing bad defense. Teams get tired. And when that happens, when defense starts breaking down, when the bullpen can't go deep, when you need to manufacture an off day for your bullpen, who do you turn to? And you turn to your ace. You turn to a true stopper who can go out there, give you eight, give you nine innings, and give your bullpen one of those extra days off. The Mets don't have that guy. The Mets don't have anybody that they can truly hand that ball to and be like, go give us nine, please.
Now, here's the interesting thing about this. I don't know that I agree with you from a standpoint of just innings pitched. Like, I don't think there's that guy like a Justin Verlander type that's going to give you seven or eight. Having said that, my concern is more about how long can they keep this up? Because right now they are 8-4 in part because of their pitching. Their ERA, they're ranking in ERA for their starting rotation. They're second in the league, first in the league in their relief corps, which is crazy.
Yeah, so that's very good.
You look at their rotation. The highest ERA in their rotation is actually Clay Holmes at 4.30. The rest are all sub three. Tyler McGill, 0.07. Griffin Canning, 2.79. David Peterson, 2.53. Senga's a 1.80. Like, I just don't think that's sustainable. But now they're pitching their heart out.
No, I mean, and that's like I was comparing them to the Red Sox earlier. I really think that that's really similar, because we saw guys like Tanner Houck become all-stars in the first half of last year and then fall off the face of the planet in the second half, like close to a 5 ERA in the second half. And I don't know if it's going to be that big of a fall off, but like, if you're relying so heavily on such insanely good work from props to them, like you said, if you're relying so heavily though on that from your rotation, these are the same guys you need to continue to be even more productive when the games start to really matter in October. And I don't know, man. Yeah, it's scary.
It is. It really is. Everything else is kind of falling the way we thought it was going to fall, if I'm being honest.
No, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
With what?
In the division, you mean?
Not in the NL East. I've moved on from that
division. Okay. The NL West is falling the way that you thought it was?
Minus the Giants, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, I am blown out of the fucking water by the NL West right now.
Let's dive into that, because let me clarify my statement. I think the Dodgers and the Padres to both have 10 wins, not surprising to me. Do I think the Dodgers would have ran away with the first 14 games? Of course, yes. But like, we always the Padres were going to be the ones to be up there with them. The Giants are the real surprise. Like,
The Giants are a big surprise.
I don't know that they have enough to end even in a wild card spot or challenging the Padres and the Dodgers. I think we agree on that, but I think this is just kind of a lightning in a bottle scenario right now.
I would have to agree. We'll see what happens come June, July, August. But you know who's really surprising to me so far is the Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks being right at 500. Now, granted, I'm over. This is coming from a Red Sox fan whose team just fell to 6-7, and I still think they're going to win the division. So, like, don't worry, Diamondbacks fans. I'm still with you. I still have you finishing second. I even have you making a run deep into the playoffs. But, like, I don't know. You got to kind of start winning ball games.
Well, here's the deal, though, with them. Like, it's a pitching issue for sure. Like, their offense, they're scoring some runs. Their offense has been really solid so far. You're seeing some great numbers by your Gabriel Moreno's of the world. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has been hitting. Everyone seems to be hitting.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of Corbin Burnes, a lot of question marks.
Yeah, and like, they're doing their best to fix it. You lose Jordan Montgomery. I still just think that that's a nothing burger contract and that's not really going to – it doesn't hurt them really. You know, like, this isn't something they're all going to be super broken up about, is him missing the whole season. Unfortunately, no shade to Jordan Montgomery. They did lock up Brandon Pfaadt, which I think is super cool for that rotation. But when you have a rotation comprised of guys like Burnes, guys like Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly – you need those guys to be the names on the back of their baseball, on the front of their baseball cards. You need them to perform the back of their baseball card if you're you know, going to be competitive. And it just hasn't quite been there yet. I also just think, I'm pretty sure Zach Gallen, if I remember correctly, is a slow starter typically. And so where I think we'll see him kind of even out throughout the rest of the season. But I do think that this is a huge year for Merrill Kelly to prove, like, okay, I'm a guy, I'm here to stay, and I'm going to contribute as a really solid number three to this pitching staff.
Well, just to give a frame of reference here, I'll ask you, what do you think right now in that Diamondbacks rotation of the five starters they have? What's the lowest ERA, if you could guess?
Only because you're asking me, I think it's somebody weird. So I'm going to go with E-Rod. And it's
the lowest ERA? Okay.
Is he the low? I haven't watched any Diamondbacks games. I'm going to guess he's two starts in, so it's probably insane. How about six? Six something.
Okay, that's interesting. So you did guess his ERA. His ERA is 6.10. That's pretty good guess. The lowest in that rotation right now is Brandon Pfaadt at 5.25. The lowest. They're all above 5.25. We have E-Rod at 6, Merrill Kelly at 7.20. Like, they're struggling.
Yeah, I don't know.
Granted,
I think this is going to two starts
in. 15 innings. Right, 15 innings in. I mean, but still.
Yeah, I just think Corbin Burnes had a shortened spring, as much as nobody – no, I won't say short in spring, but a definitely weird offseason, you know, especially for starters and pitchers. Like, they meet with their pitching coaches throughout the offseason and work on stuff, and they're in the lab and they keep the arm in shape. I know that he's the utmost professional. He's probably keeping himself in shape to the fullest extent. But that doesn't mean that you created a relationship with your new catcher or worked on your pitch mix with your new pitching coach or anything like that with a new organization. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure he had a somewhat shortened spring. Maybe he didn't. Either way, he's a new organization, change of scenery. I think he's going to figure it out. It's still Corbin Burnes at the end of the day. And like I said, I do think that Zach Allen is going to figure it out. And I think that Merrill Kelly will be okay. I think Merrill Kelly probably finishes somewhere around like a 4.0 ERA.
Oh, that'd be nice for Merrill Kelly. I would really, good for him if he were able to do that. I want to move over to the American League, Parker. I want to ask you, just as we talk about what's going on in the American League, which division in the American League right now has every team with a negative run differential?
Ooh, I have the standings pulled up, but I don't have run differential pulled up. I'm going to go with, well, being, this is probably cheating because I can see the standings, but I can't see run differential. The AL West.
That is correct. The Texas Rangers are leading the pack at 9-4 with a negative 8 run differential. The lowest is obviously the A's at, no surprise, at negative 17, but every team has a negative run differential and they're just cannibalizing each other right now, quite frankly.
They are. And then the A's also did not really benefit from getting absolutely fucking dogpiled by the Cubs in that one series in Sutter Health.
That was one of the games I watched, yeah.
They got smoked.
They totally did. That AL West is just going to be such a fascinating division. I do get nervous for Texas because Wyatt Langford did officially go on the IL today. That is no good news for Texas.
No, that's bad. He's on my fantasy team. it's super bad. But I will say that the way the division has played out for now, and I'm not looking at who they've played. I'm not looking at, you know, anything other than just pulling up the standings and taking a look. The Angels so far aren't playing a bad brand of baseball. And if Houston is a 5-6 team for the rest of the season, which I think you and I both agree could very much happen, this division's starting to look very interesting because I do think Seattle will figure it out. I don't think that they're going to be, you know, a 333 win percentage for the rest of the season. But
oh God, I'm choking on what you just said. Hold on. So listen. Let's stop there for a second. You're saying you don't think, but are you really sure? I mean, if their offense doesn't do anything, I'm not so confident.
Really? You don't think so?
Yeah.
You think their starting rotation isn't good enough to just will them to victory for at least half their games?
No, because this is a game of adjustments.
Okay. I think we're seeing the end of Luis Castillo, by the way.
I do. Right. Oh, 100%. So I have faith in their rotation, no doubt about it. But if you were to tell me today, is it possible that the Mariners don't hit at all this season and find themselves in fourth place in that division? I say probably, yeah.
Yeah. When you say it like that, like I could totally see Houston, Texas, and if these are the Angels we have this year, them finishing above the Mariners. I could also see the Mariners winning the fucking division.
Also, right, 100%. We've given them so much shit. It's not that they don't have the talent. It's that the variability is so wide. It's going to be it can be either one of those things, and everything has to click for them. But they have not. We talked about this over and over again. They have not shored this up enough to make me feel confident about that.
Not even a little bit. No, not even a little bit. And you know what sucks too is their of course their rotation is doing their rotation things. Like besides Luis Castillo, they're all doing fine. Bryce Miller does have over 5 ERA right now, but like, okay, who cares? You know, it's one or two starts into the season, but the other guys are already almost at they're at half a WAR or more apiece besides Luis Castillo and Bryce Miller. So it's like, yeah, they're already doing their thing. So I don't know. I think that these Mariners could really use a kick in the ass, which we've been saying for a year now.
I'll tell you what, though. I think I I think they are going to have a very talented Luis Castillo. And the reason why I say that is because they actually have two Luis Castillos. They have Luis Castillo and Luis F. Castillo. Say. So they've increased their chances of a hit. Damn on it. Luis Castillo, just to be fair.
Damn it. Well, that's certainly something. I don't know. Angels being 74 was not in the cards for me. I'm happy for them. Like I said, the Astros could just be 5-7, 417 win percentage ball club for the rest of the year. And it honestly would surprise a lot of people. I'm going to be that guy and say, I don't think it would be very surprising to me. I think that I would be like, yeah, I mean, that was what happened when you let your entire team walk over the course of half a decade. So
here's the thing, though. We didn't even talk about this, and this kind of proves my point, and I want to make sure this gets out there. They lost Victor Robles for 12 weeks with a fractured shoulder.
That is horrible.
That sucks. That incredible makes this so much catch, harder.
By the way.
Oh, yeah. Before all of that, yes.
Yeah.
But it's devastating for them. They can't afford that.
No, they can't. They need career years out of guys like Kyle Raleigh and Rosarena.
Oh God.
Oh, man. God.
I just look at their lineup and I want to throw up in my mouth. I hate it.
Yeah, what to do? Should have signed a bat. I don't know. Like it's
should have. We told you. We warned you.
Come to find out, everybody knows how bad it is to hit in that ballpark, not even because of the start. Like, we chalk it up as like, oh, they have an incredible starting rotation, which they do. But apparently that ballpark's like the batter's eye sucks. I think we talked about this in the last episode, but like, yeah, you had a hard time signing a bat because you refused to fix a key trait of your ballpark. I don't know.
Yeah. No, you're right. You know whose rotation is not kind of – firing on all cylinders, surprise, surprise, it's the Baltimore Orioles.
No, the Orioles have had, it's been a strange first few games for them. Certainly, like, if you'd asked me on opening day who was going to win the division, I might have told you the Orioles, because they looked incredible. But as it stands right now, the Orioles really have not had a good showing in terms of, like, okay, they've been shut down. I know they got shut down by Garrett Crochet in one of their games against the Red Sox. And like you said, their pitching has not been very good. But like, has the offense even been very good? Like,
I mean, the offense, I mean, they're middle of the pack, right? They're 11th in average, 11 in OBP. I mean, obviously, the big surprise, honestly, in their offense is you have Cedric Mullins batting 308. You have Ryan O'Hearn out of the DH spot with 310.
I think Tyler O'Neill's raking, right?
Tyler O'Neill's raking because, you know, after opening day, he just goes down from there. It's all start at the top and just go down from there.
I still will not understand why – Tyler O'Neill. Now, granted, he found himself a good deal in a good situation for a few years, so good for him, because he was never going to be a guy who signed a 10-year deal. But Tyler O'Neill hit 31, I think, home runs last year from the right-hand side of the plate, and then went to the place that it might be the hardest place to hit a right-handed home run, pull home run in all of Major League Baseball. But he seems to be doing well for them. Yeah, I don't know, man. The Orioles, I think, will figure it out to a certain extent, but this is exactly what we talked about during the predictions and during the preseason episodes that we did on them. They need – or the AL East preview, that's what it was. They need pitching so badly. They cannot afford to continue to underperform in the pitching department.
No, you're right. Now there's something else I want to point out. I'll ask you this. There's one player on this team right now in their lineup who in 22 plate appearances, he is batting 143, 182 OBP, 190 slugging, and already has a negative 0.2 WAR. Who is that?
I cheated because I already had their B-Ref page pulled up, but Gunnar Henderson needs to get his shit together. It's been five games.
Dude, that's a problem. Like that, I'm not telling Orioles fans like, hey, this is DEFCON 1 situation, but that's concerning.
I don't know if it's a crazy problem. Look what happened to Rafael Devers. Rafael Devers went 0 for, 26 to start the year with, 135 strikeouts. And all of a sudden now his average is, I think, either over 300 or about to be over 300 with a few doubles and a bunch of RBIs. Like, this stuff turns around very quickly, especially when you've only played five games. And he's batting 143, so it's not like the end of the world. He does have a double. He does have, three total hits. It's Gunnar. He put up 9.1. Yeah. He put up 9.1 WAR last season, and he started the year in AAA rehabbing an injury. And what did he have? It was like a contusion of some sort, like a muscle sensitivity swinging injury that, like, yeah, it's going to throw you off a little bit, but he was also hitting nukes in AAA, by the way, AAA Norfolk. Boom.
Hey, there you go. Boom.
So I think he's going to be fine. I still think that this is like Bobby Witt, and that he's going to continue to be incredible. And I'm going to have to watch him for the next fucking 15 years.
Diet Bobby Witt. That's exactly what he is. Diet Bobby Witt. All the flavor, no calories. Okay. So
all the homers, no stolen bases.
All the homers. That's exactly right.
He does have two stolen bases, actually. So he's tied with the team lead. Oh, wait, no, he's not. Jorge Mateo has three. But it's okay. Jorge Mateo has a negative 100 OPS plus.
Jesus. All right, Parker. This is something I think we should do every week. You brought it up. I really like the idea. Why don't we each do kind of player of the week, one in American League, one in the National League? Who stood out to you in the last week from both leagues?
Willier Abreu from the American League. And this is, again, just another one of those things. Yep, Parker's talking about the fucking Red Sox again. But genuinely, like, Willier Abreu has completely just set the world on fire. He hit, everybody knows, like, you know, it's not the week that I'm giving him the award for. Everybody knows he hit that home run in the ninth inning in Texas on opening day, and he's been doing great since then. But let's just talk about his last five games. Well, just in that St. Louis series, which is kind of what we're awarding him for, he had six hits, six RBIs, only struck out twice. I don't know. He has been absolutely incredible. He had the walk-off in the first game of the doubleheader against the Cardinals. He hit a bomb. He has been the linchpin of a Red Sox offense that really has not been as good as we hoped it would be to this point in the season. They have had their breakout games. They did win a couple games against the Cardinals, 13-9 and 18-7. But evidenced by these last two games against the Blue Jays, they've scored 2 and 1 runs in the last two games. And then one run again tonight. So it's like,
yep.
Okay. This offense needs a spark plug, and to this point he's been that spark plug. I was surprised he didn't win American League Player of the Week honors. Alex Bregman did. Alex Bregman almost nearly won my Player of the Week, but he had already won it in the American League, so I'm gonna give him the I'm gonna hold off on him for a little bit. But I think Willier Abreu, already to this point in the season, he is still OPSing 1.2. He's got a 1289 OPS, and his OPS plus is still securely above the 250 mark. And basically, until that isn't the case anymore, he's going to continue to get that consideration from me. That's what about nice. You? Were you really got like the AL?
And the AL, I'm going to go with one that's kind of flying under the radar. He's not blowing anyone away, but I've been liking his at-bats, and that's Anthony Volpe.
Okay.
You know, Anthony Volpe was a guy last year, and we talked about it here together, that, you know, the Yankees fans just have a big heart for Anthony Volpe because he's like Derek Jeter 7.0. But the thing with Anthony Volpe is, you know, last year in his first 15 games in 24, I mean, he had a line of a 382, 477, 564. And I think that was a good sign for everyone. Of course, that he did not maintain that, of course, through 2024. Having said that, I feel a little better about him in this first week because, you know, his line's still, you know, 268, 333, 634 slugging. So that's looking a lot better. But I know the slugging really surprised me there. I mean, he has four homers and 12 RBIs. But, you know, I don't know if it's a torpedo.
I'm pretty sure three of them. Now, this is a Yankee, so I have to detract a little, but not to completely detract, but I'm pretty sure three of his four home runs, if not all four, are one of those, like, only a home run in Yankee Stadium home runs.
Sure. But that goes to what I was, then that goes to my point that I was going to bring up is that I'm not going based off of the home runs themselves. I'm going off of the fact that he seems to be making better contact.
He's a better version of himself this season, for sure.
Correct. And you can tell that. Like, he is just hitting the ball with more authority, and that's very apparent. And if he can keep doing that, then I think you can end the season batting 268, 270, and be a nice little spark plug there at short. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. To me, it's funny. Like, you know, another guy that I considered for my AL Player of the Week is a Yankee, actually, and it's not the guy that you just went with. I think Trent Grisham has been insane for that Yankee team, especially over the last week. He's hitting 375 with a 423 on base percentage, 792 slug, and that's a 1215 OPS. He's been very good. He's got three home runs in the last week, so good for him. Good for a guy who has been a bench bat for a long time. And kind of like every third day outfielder for a long time to really be producing at an everyday level. So good for him.
It's just crazy to me. There's always these goddamn guys that are these guys that are like on the bench that always find a way to like be a spark plug. And Trent Grisham mm-hmm. has played for everyone and their mother. And he always seems to be that guy. I'm like, oh, who's really hot right now? Trent Grisham. Like
fucking Trent Grisham. Yep.
Every damn time.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. No, I got to. He's very good. He's very good at the game of baseball. But he's not in the National League. And we got to give somebody in the National League the National League Player of the Week. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'm going to go first on this one because it's related to another guy I've been thinking a lot about this week. I think the one person that got physically ill when they heard about Vlad Jr.'s deal was Tom Ricketts. Because he's going to need to give Kyle Tucker a shit ton of money. And guess who's earning that shit ton of money?
Kyle Tucker.
Kyle Tucker, his line right now, since coming back from the Dodgers series, is 364, 491, 795 slugging. I mean, he is really lifting the Cubs to their division leading record right now. Let me make sure I have it right. It's 9-6, they're leading the division. So if he can maintain that, we've talked about it before, I'm here for the tissues for my Cubs brethren, because that's just not going to be a pretty picture.
No, he's getting more and more expensive every at bat. He's got to get put on a phantom IL stint or something like that, keep the price down at this point. Because he's crushing it. Not what I thought we would see from Kyle Tucker. I knew we'd see a good version of him. I knew we would see a platform year version of Kyle Tucker, but this is on a whole nother level. I don't think he can, obviously there's no way he keeps it up for a whole season, but
no.
But maybe it's putting on batting gloves, man. Who knows?
Well, that was the problem this whole time. Some of these numbers are just crazy. Like five home runs, 16 RBIs so far this season. His mm-hmm. OPS plus, guess what his OPS plus is? I don't even know if you're even going to guess this.
For Kyle Tucker. 289.
Ooh, wow. You overshot it. That's surprising. Yeah, 232.
And, oh, wow. Okay.
He's already accumulated 1.1 war, which is crazy.
And that's nuts.
A week and a half of baseball.
No. Speaking of war, we didn't tell anybody about this. This was in a private text conversation. But I found the replacement level player, guys. I found Joe Schmo replacement level player. Stay tuned for that. I'm going to talk to you about my player of the week first, and I'm going to show you. You can look. You all will be able to look this player up and be like, wow, 1.1 wins above replacement, 1.1 wins above fill in the blank player we'll give you here in a second. So my National League player of the week is going to none other than Mr. Corbin Barrels over there in Arizona, because Corbin Carroll right now over the last 7 days has a 1433 OPS. He's slugging 964. He has four home runs during that span. He's walked three times. And this man, now he hasn't stolen any bases, which honestly, maybe this is the version of Corbin Carroll that like we needed. Like this reminds me a lot of like MVP 2 year for Jacoby Ellsbury. Like we're just going to start swinging the fucking bat. And slugging is more important than swiping a bag for the most part. He scored eight runs though, so there's that speed. Like there's the speed.
Sure.
Scoring eight runs in that span. He's been absolutely lighting the world on fire. A couple doubles, a triple, of course, because it's Corbin Carroll. He is one of my favorite players in baseball. He might be the first non-Red Sox jersey that I buy to like wear.
That's interesting.
I love me some Corbin Carroll, man. He's my NL player of the week.
I mean, that's a good pick. I'm with you. Like if Corbin Carroll is going to go ahead and make that is going to have that solid of quality of contact metrics. And he's someone that I will happily let him steal a mere 25, 30 bags only if I can get that from him, because he is naturally going to get that in runs rather than stolen bases, and that's fine. I mean, can you imagine if Corbin Carroll turns it on and keeps that going for that Diamondbacks team? I mean, the only thing that's going to stop him, like we said earlier, is the pitching.
Yeah. So if Corbin Carroll continues to have an average launch angle of 13.6 degrees and an average exit velocity of 95.3 miles per hour, we're going to see a really fucking good season from him.
We're going to see some bombs in Phoenix. Holy shit.
Yeah, we are. That's like Kyle Schwarber, Ellie De La Cruz, Matt Olson exit velocity from a guy who stands like, 4'9"?
That's insane.
Not quite.
Wow, you really did him really did him wrong there on that one.
5'10". He's only 2 inches shorter than me. But if you want to see a fucking bloodbath, guys, go to his Baseball Savant page. I'll show you right now. It is very red.
Holy crap.
Very, very red.
Wow. Yeah.
There you go.
Jesus.
Yep. But I want to talk about this replacement level player. So ever since the dawn of sabermetrics and war and Bill James, and since the first day Bill James was online, we've been talking about this replacement level player and wins above replacement, and I fucking found him. So if you go to baseballreference.com right now and type in DJ Stewart, and fun fact, I only looked him up because I followed him on Instagram before he even made his big league debut, because I went to a Norfolk Tides baseball game and saw him, and he legged out. He scored from first on a double, and he's 5'11", 230 pounds. He's not a small guy. And I remember just the hustle play, and he was super, he like got up and, you know, got super excited. I was like, wow, that's a ball player right there. I remember being very excited to see that play happen. Then he makes his debut with the Baltimore Orioles. He plays five seasons there for a grand total of, we'll say around 200 games for them over the course of five seasons, and then played 58 and 74 games over the last two, or in 2024 and in 2023 for the New York Mets. All the while accumulating a whopping 0.0 wins above replacement in 1,001 plate appearances.
Wow.
With a OPS plus of 100. Which, for those of you who don't know about OPS plus, 100 means you are the league average player offensively. So that's DJ Stewart, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, so we need to take this a step further. Maybe this is something you can do for next week. You need to go and see if there's anyone else that has that 0.0 WAR and 100 OPS plus.
Yeah, I need to go. I'm just going to go to the WAR leaderboard right now and go see. That's
crazy.
I could not believe that.
He's not a good baseball player. He is not a bad baseball player. He is a baseball player.
Just, have you ever seen the interview with the NBA player Brian Scalabrine where he's like, hey, for all you dudes talking shit on your armchair, I'm closer to LeBron James than you are to me. It's like DJ Stewart's actually probably the best baseball player that I would have ever played with if I'd ever been on a team with him. Right. And he's going to show up and make some men's league team very good. but he is the replacement level big league player, which means technically he's a better baseball player over the last, what, six seasons than Anthony Rendon.
I mean, that's also a pretty low bar, friends.
Yeah.
Wow, you know what's the best about that? The best about that is you stumbled upon that. You just literally stumbled upon it. That's awesome.
Yeah, just so happened. I'm trying to find the whole career leaderboard for WAR, but yeah, no, it's hilarious. Oops, go back. I think I just found it. But I'm gonna have to scroll for a while. But yeah, no, I thought that was hilarious, especially because that's a guy, like, my family has spoken about him in conversation. Like, wow, that one guy, he was just so, he had so much hustle and so much heart. What a guy. And then just a poor dude.
Oh, goodness. It's gonna be interesting. We're getting into the middle of April here. Obviously, we have a lot of things to watch between teams that are surprising, teams that need to pull themselves out of the gutter, like the Braves. So we'll see what happens over the course of the next week. Parker, do you have any last words tonight?
Go Sox. Go Sox. And I am so happy we are now. You know what? Yeah, here's my final thought. Thank God opening week is over. I love opening day. It is genuinely, to me, it is like the most fun day of the year. But the week or two of baseball games happening at random times with an off day randomly thrown in afterward is kind of a crap viewing experience, especially for me. Like, opening home openers are always at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon local time. And for me, if it's an East Coast team, that means the game's starting at 10. And it's like, I don't want to watch a baseball game at 10. I'm at work, man. I got stuff to do.
Right.
So I'm glad that whole time period is over and that we get to go back to games being in the evenings. And I don't know. I'm so happy it's back. We're genuinely in the full swing of the season. They've started putting people's actual batting averages on screen when they come to the plate. That's how you know the season's in full swing. Not their last year stats, this year's stats.
Yep, that is exactly right. We are so back. We are so back. Hey, guys, make sure you're subscribing and liking what we're doing on YouTube. And then obviously, wherever you're listening to your the audio version of the show, please do that. You know what to do. Do the right thing. Help us out. And we'll catch you next week here on Late Night Baseball. Take care, everybody.